SiriusXM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Horse racing, handicapping,
interviews.
This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Tuesday, race fans. Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone. 964, if you're listening to Sirius XM online, and at our website, too, stevebick.com. It is that special Tuesday we look forward to, been building up to, Royal Ascot, and the festivities underway, although I didn't see the usual, I wasn't following Twitter too closely earlier this morning to see the opening of the gates and some of the flowing in of what can be a rowdy crowd. Has the NBC coverage, NBC Sports Network, are they up? And I didn't think to turn the TV on either. I can think back to that too. I guess it was, it's got to be a few years ago where, right at the beginning, where it was kind of watching, the feed was not matching the, sometimes the, you know, the TV. So I'd have, I don't know, either Capital OTB, probably Capital OTB on, and Casey and I would coordinate the, try to coordinate the start. It's gotten a lot easier because virtually everybody is taking it, and you can watch the feed. You know, when you watch that, when you watch the racing TV feed from the UK, one of the funny things about it, you know, it's like a common, it's a common simulcast feed, so they kind of bop in and out from the various, you know, circuits and the various racetracks. Like right now, they're building up to the second race at Thirsk. And I see Carlisle, I know, is running and Stratford as well. So there'll be, you know, there'll be a $600,000 group one at Royal Ascot, and they'll cut away, you know, after they cross the wire to get to some, to get to Red Car, you know, or some other, some other track out in the hinterlands. It's kind of fun. And it's just so funny because there's the pageantry and there's the, you know, the huge crowd at Ascot. And then you, you know, go out into the countryside and there's some, like some barren little countryside racetrack that, you know, there's like six horses look like they're out running in a field. It makes me laugh every time. So we're going to build up and we're going to give you the first four today. Queen Anne Stakes coming up at the bottom of the hour. That nice, bulky field. Get things rolling. The Coventry, the first two-year-old race of the stand and the King Stand. The sprint race that has got Joe Orsino in premise. And then the big St. James Palace, the feature, the tutti features of the first day here. And then after we get off the air, you can follow up at noon with the Ascot Stakes and the Wolferton as well, which goes at about 12:35. So the first day of Royal Ascot, and I haven't seen the procession and that kind of thing, but it's all there. The pageantry, the stuffiness. I don't know. Some people love this, some don't. Anglophiles will revel in it. The Queen Anne, some early glance. Dick Powell's going to join us. We'll combine Royal Ascot coverage with Presque Isle Downs and the stake yesterday. We got to get to that. I was remiss yesterday regarding the two stakes. I realized as soon as I got off the air that, because we were running it, we were going to run it off the as a main track only at Philly, and I realized right away when I saw those PPs, I said, "Oh, I forgot to alert everybody to the stake at Presque and the stake at Finger Lakes, the Niagara at Finger Lakes, and the Carl Boyce at Presque Isle. We'll go over it with, yeah, nice, yeah, crazy prices, a crazy result in that Carl Boyce Memorial yesterday at Presque Isle, where the three favorites were fifth, sixth, and seventh out of seven horses. Yeah, they were last, second to last, and third to last, and all the big prices finished first, second, third, and fourth. It was a crazy result. So we'll bring it up with Dick, and we'll catch up. Hope he's obviously feeling better. We missed him last week, but Dick very much into the international scene, as you know, and we'll talk about today and tomorrow with Dick, Royal Ascot, and then when we do some Hong Kong, as things start to wind down. They're getting close to finishing the season at Sha Tin and Happy Valley. So when we talk to Dick on Thursday, we'll get his Thursday, Friday, Saturday ideas. And, of course, I sent out the tweet earlier and laid out Kev Humphrey's price plays for today. I'll do that. He mostly gave today and tomorrow and then some Saturday. So if he has anything else, I'll do, you know, during the course of the week, Thursday and Friday. But day one, day two, and closing day were really the focus that Kev offered. It was great to get him on the show after years and years. And in fact, I went back. I tried to find every picture from Facebook and such between Kev and I going way back to Saratoga at 2006 was the first picture I could find with Kev. And he would just show up. He the first few years, he would just kind of show up. And then we got, knowing that, contact and knowing that he was going to be at Derby or at Breeders' Cup or come to Saratoga, whatever it was. But a fabulous fan and a tremendous handicapper and player. So hope he put us all on a few price options, and that's what he focuses on at this meet. And and it's easy enough to with the international marketplace and odds checker, which I direct you to as well, to see how the betting shops, what the bookies are offering on the horses. And I've always used that spread between what the market is and what the tote is as a way to maybe identify some prices to include with the horses that you expect to be highly competitive. That I do that for, for any of these, for Dubai and for this as well. So in this first Queen Anne, you did have Friday the conversation with Nick Luck as well. And of course, Nick on NBC right now with their coverage, and Accidental Agent, who was 10-1 morning line and last year's winner, Accidental Agent 14-1, which was the price we were looking at Friday in the markets. That was Nick's push, and he's willing to come right back to Accidental Agent. And Kev was looking at One Master and Lord Glitters. One Master outposted. He's the 16. He leaves from, they have their post position and they have the barrier draw. He's going to leave from the 13, and a big price, One Master, 33-1. And of course, the fact that we could reach for Dick Powell right now. Let's get Dick in here because no break. Thanks to my friend Steve and partner Steve Carlin. NBC is up and running with their coverage. No break is the answer on the break question. We're going to pick up Dick Powell first, and we're going to get Dick's thoughts right away. And One Master, 33-1. You're looking at Lord Glitters, 23-1. So one master not taking any, neither of them taking any money. Your favorites, Lebrivito, the O'Brien, not a, well, it's a partnership, actually. It's actually Prince Khalid and Michael Tabor partnered on Lebrivado and Brevito. Ryan Moore, 3-1. Mushtri for Sheikh Hamdan. And Sir Michael Stout, 4-1. Those are your first two choices. Barney Roy, the Appleby Godolphin runner with James Doyle, 9-2. Those are your three prices, and then things start to careen into double digits. So, well, 6-1, 2 for Lawrence, the nice French bread that North American audiences might be familiar with. So, 6-1. All right, those are your single digit odds. Dick Powell joins us, and Dick, good morning.
Good morning, Steve.
How you feeling? You all right?
Little by little,
getting back. This was if you're going to hit a 10,000-to-1 shot, it really should be horse racing, not some bizarre medical event that makes no sense. Because I have pancreatitis, and the two triggers for pancreatitis are alcohol, I don't drink, and gallstone. I haven't had a gallbladder in 25 years, so. From out of nowhere, I get hit by lightning at, you know, like 10,000-to-1 odds. So why couldn't it have been some paramutual event?
There you, not exactly. A medical event. Exactly.
I'm like, why me? Pourquoi moi?
Well, I'm glad.
But it happened, and I'm on the road. It's kind of a little bumpy. Some days are good, some days are better. My energy level kind of goes up and down, but you can tell it in my voice. When I'm feeling good, my voice is better. When I'm kind of weak and feeble, my voice is weak and feeble. So,
yeah. Sound good.
We've survived.
Sound good
that.
This morning. Yeah. Yeah. Well, before we dive into some press things, I want to get a first quick impression, and then we'll come back to Royal Ascot. But any thoughts in this Queen Anne to start the meet?
Well, I went pretty logical here with the 9, Mustashri, or Michael Stout. And it looked like he, last year, the horse seemed to do better at the end of the year. And this year, it looks like he's kind of front-loaded the schedule. He's a 6-year-old gelding, so you got a chance at Ascot, why not? He won the Lockinge easily over a terrific field. And I think that'll do him well today. That was on firm ground. Today, the ground is good to firm on the straight. And there was some rain when the coverage started, but it doesn't seem to be doing anything now, so I'm not expecting it to affect the ground. But this is a one, you know, a straightaway race. He draws post 8 with Jimmy Crowley. And I don't see a lot of, I don't know what you want to call it, just upsets in the opening day. I see a lot of chalk, unfortunately. So I like the 9. And then underneath, I like the 6, Lebrivito from Aidan O'Brien and Ryan Moore. They were in the Lockinge. They had trouble in it and were beaten less than 4 lengths. They third in their first start of the year. This is a 5-year-old by a terrific French sire named Sione.
Right.
And he has just dominated the French stallion ranks and has a nice runner here. And third, I went with the 1, Accidental Agent, who won this race last year. Kind of went off form, but then returned this year, and the first prep was the Lockinge, you know, Group 1, major, major race, and ran very well to be third. Well, Charlie Bishop rides back for Eva Jane Houghton, and there's nothing not to like about that one. Drew's farther outside, so Bishop can watch the others and see where they're going, where the fields are going to go. It's always fascinating with these straightaway races. Where does the field go? Like, there's so many horses. Sometimes they split up. Sometimes they stay towards the middle. Sometimes they go to stand side. Sometimes they go to far side. So he drew on the far side. But he was brilliant last year at long odds. And I don't see any reason why he can't run back towards that performance, because I thought he might have beaten a bit better field last year than this year's field.
Well, Nick Luck was with us on Friday. Nick was quite content to reach for him again in this spot. And then yesterday, of course, we had our visit from Kev Humphreys, who always is looking for, you know, outsiders and horses at the very least to hook up with the logicals. He encouraged use of One Master and Lord Glitters, the 16 and the 7. And, you know, Dick, a quick, you know, you mentioned Accidental Agent. He's going to wear the one cloth, but he's leaving from the 16. Explain the barrier draw versus the saddle cloth, the way they do it.
Well, if you were to back up and look at this field, they are listed in alphabetical order. So Accidental Agent, Barney Roar, Beat the Rank. So they get the saddle cloths assigned, in this case, by alphabetical order. And then that might change if there's a filly in the race or something like that, like the Lawrence is the 15, but she's the first filly. One Master is the second filly, so she's the 16. So they assign saddle cloths that way. Then they do the barrier draw. So in international racing, not just Ascot, but international racing, anytime you get out of North America, this is how things are done. So you have to pay careful attention to your saddle cloth numbers and your posters. Occasionally they match up, like a lot of times in Dubai when they run stake races that are not handicaps. You'll see it when they run handicaps, the highest rated horse is number one. So for instance, the Melbourne Cup, they run 1 through 24. Well, the top weighted horse is the one horse, and then on the way down. So that's how handicap races are done. One point today, Steve, race five is a handicap with a gigantic field, and they will pay place money down to fourth place. And handicap races with 16 or more starters, they will pay fourth money in the place. So you could run fourth and have, you know, $8 coming to you, and a lot of people don't realize that. If you're betting on an ADW account, it doesn't matter. They'll try, you know, they'll pay you whether you realize it or not. But if you have a live ticket in your hand, just be careful that that they pay down the four. And it's place wagering in international racing can be very lucrative. These horses can pay $6, $8, $10. There's nothing wrong with hitting a nice place. And you'll see the announcers call in each way. And in each way is win place. So that's some of the terminology that you might hear today. When you watch Australia, you hear a lot of jargon. And this broadcast, because it's kind of international scope, they'll probably avoid stuff like that. But, they've got to really pay attention to not only post positions, where you drew, but if you have any kind of access to international ratings, because all these horses have ratings. And if you have any kind of access, you can get them from the Racing Post. I got mine with this tremendous file that Hong Kong Jockey Club sent out, because Hong Kong is simulcasting these races back into Hong Kong. So naturally, if they're going to take a race, they have loads and loads of information on the horses. So I get a nice list of each race and the international ratings on each horse. And that's a nice quick reference to look at and things like that. So it's always good to know that stuff. You don't have to be a slave to it, but in this case, I have the Racing Post ratings for all the horses, and just another tool.
I appreciate it, and we'll mention with about, 11 minutes now to the first here, and odds have not appreciably changed. And on the odds front, Dick, explain what transpired with the commingled pools and how it benefits us.
Well, we're able to bet into the UK tote. So a lot of times in international racing, for instance, Dubai, there is no live on-track pool because they don't have betting. So a lot of that gets fractured with parimutuel PMU in France. And what we did when we first started simulcasting Dubai racing was to use Fumalela out of South Africa as a pool to bet in. So North American money went into South Africa, which also had some German betting and some other countries, because you're trying to build some kind of liquidity in the pools. Well, here you don't have to worry about liquidity. Like, It's like betting into Hong Kong. You got gigantic pools here, and you have the betting menu of win, place, exacta, trifecta, and swinger. And swinger is the omni swinger where you could box three horses, and you get back first and second, second and third, and first and third. And that, remember, they're Quinella, so you get them both ways. So that's what, when you look at your, like, I got the breast pass performances at the top of the page of that types. And that's, you know, that's pretty standard. Nothing very, very different than out of the ordinary for international racing. But the big pools are very nice to bet into because you're just gaining from all that liquidity that's in there. So any bet that you might make, not going to have effect on it. Whereas in some of these smaller tracks and smaller pools, yeah, it's like betting a small track harness race.
Well, looking forward to the first, and each day we'll be able to bring as many as four of the Royal Ascot races, and we'll turn toward the first in a few minutes. Right now, want to turn our attention to last night at Presque Isle, and I was looking forward to this race, and the result, Dick, was crazy. I mean, to have the top three choices, including well-abled, who went off at under 2-5, the top three choices finished 5th, 6th, and 7th, and basically the chart is completely upside down. Did you participate in this, Carl Boyce, last night?
No, I did not participate. I did write in my picks, which are available on PresqueIsleDowns.com, and then click on racing, you'll see Dick's picks, and you get full analysis. I did think that there could be a pace meltdown with well-abled in there. Lanier was in there. There were some fast, fast horses. The only one I thought that could do something was Caloric, number 4, who won the 3rd at Monster Odds. And it was just a nutty race where they got out, they duped it out, and next thing, here come the other horses picking up the pieces. But More Than Good sat a nice trip off the dueling speed horses, and he winds up pulling away to a nice win at almost 16-1. So just the payoffs were probably limited, but obviously limited by pool size, because the pool was 18,000. The try paid 8-something for 50 cents, so bigger pool might have paid a little bit more. But, that was a crazy, crazy race, and Prescott has been playing fast. Running times have been very fast. This running time wasn't outrageously fast. They went 57 flat, 103.17, which is good, but not what we've seen in some of the 6 furlong races at the meet so far. And part of that is just due to rain. That rain quickens up synthetic tracks, and it tightens them up. And we've seen it throughout the meet because it's been raining throughout the meet. When doesn't it rain?
No, it's been ridiculous, and particularly close to the lake, you get all kinds of lake effect weather that makes it even more difficult. Basically, from Watertown to Syracuse, Rochester, Buffalo, down to Erie. I mean, it Cleveland. I've driven across west and down in that direction enough times between the lake effect snow and crazy things, and having gone to school close by and living close by there, it's not good under the best of circumstances, let alone with the weather patterns we've seen this winter and spring.
Yeah, it's just we hope it kind of turns around before Saratoga does.
Yeah, that's true. It's good.
And it's been impossible for anyone to hay. We haven't had 4 or 5 days of dry, sunny weather where you could get tractors out there, cut, ted it up, and bale it. So that the hay fields are all overgrown, and then eventually the quality of the hay drops. If you got too much weeds growing, and just the ideal time, the hay would have been probably a week or two ago. there's been no window to go out there because you don't want to hay and then get a thunderstorm. So everyone's looking for that window, and so far it hasn't happened. So, and not just here, but Ohio and other people.
Yeah, the whole region. I got to mention the winter here also more than good, and for Jeff Skerritt, what a great win this is. I'm pretty sure his first stake win, and he's got limited. This is his first year, with training under his name, and so we congratulate him. He's got 63 starts to his credit cumulatively, what a nice win this is at nearly 16-1, 33.60, more than good, 37.60 the place, less than perfect. Kevin Rice and Michelle Winters third with Caloric, as you mentioned, just under 39-1, just a crazy chart. And let me also note Miss Lily B, Chris Engelhart for owner Ron Brown, romped to the Niagara win earlier in the afternoon at Finger Lakes. So the two Monday stakes. Back to Presque Isle. And, Dick, we didn't talk last week, but, I've been watching, particularly Mondays, Tuesdays, and the racing's been good.
Yeah, what's amazing when you follow it is how often horses run. Horses are coming back on 2-3 weeks rest. They're in the box. We kind of stick to the schedule. So we ride a race. If it fills, great. If it doesn't fill, we're using the race. Because if you start, the games of not running and, using another race substitutes everything else, then you got total chaos. So that gets adjusted to once the meet begins. Horses ship in, they get ready, the young horses get ready, and it's gone very, very well. I think the track's been probably more speed favored than normal, even though it is a speed favored track when you sprint. So that's been kind of par for what we've seen over the years. And then somewhere I had the trainer standing with Jerry Brooks still in front, and Gallardo is the leading rider by a pretty good margin, considering he and Morales have almost the same amount of mounts here. He has 116 mounts. Morales has 124. Gallardo takes more days off when he's riding at other tracks, but still he has 28 winners. Morales has 21. Scott Speed, who has not only 25% of the meet, but he has big numbers in distance races. And that sticks out when you examine these riders. Like Uwe Villa Gomez is the fifth leading rider, but he does way better going two turns than he does in sprint races. I mean, it's noticeable, and I think it's significant. So those are the riders. So far, Gallardo is in front. He'll probably continue to hold that, but as the meet goes on and he takes more days off to ride at Monmouth or other racetracks, that might change a little. Jerry Brooks is way ahead of last year's winner, Teresa Connolly. Now, Jerry won 2 years ago. He has 14 winners already from 56 starters. And John Bourque has 8. Teresa has 6. And Ron Potts has 6. And they all have pretty good winning percentages. So it's the usual group at the top, a little bit shaken up with Brooks doing so much better than the rest of them right now, but that's, as always, subject to change. And we've seen our terrific horses and courses, like Nice and Easy, going, 16 wins at the track. And then other horses that are just, we've had a 10-year-old winner, a 9-year-old winner. So to me, Pepita, which should be front and center with what's going on in horse racing, continues to provide a safe running environment for older type horses that, if they're racing on dirt, I don't know where their careers would be. But knowing that they can go to Presque Isle and run 3-4 months on a kind, forgiving surface, that even if you have some nicks and bruises and stuff like that, they seem to get over the track fine and recover very well. So that's always a big story at the meet, and what it does is it just brings familiar names every year to the race card, because you just see, oh yeah, this horse won four times last year. It's, you know, it doesn't matter as they get older, they just keep winning. So that's always a lot of fun. That's a big angle to follow handicap-wise. Oh, I see they're going to the gate. They're talking to Charlie Appleby. He probably is sitting on a good Ascot meet. The bookmakers expect Aidan O'Brien to be the leading trainer, but Appleby's loaded, especially in a 5-furlong sprint. One of the points, Steve, in race four today.
Yeah, Dick, and hold on, because I'm just watching for. I've got two different feeds here, and I'm and at for instance on the UK feed, they're hanging around at Thirsk, and so you know down at the studio, you're probably seeing the same thing, and I'm wondering if
I'm seeing the NBC Sports Network.
That's nice. I don't. we're taking it off of the simulcast feeds. That's the option that we've got down at the studio.
Well, quick point about the St. James Palace. Even though it's run at a mile, the same as this race, the Queen Anne, it does come around a bend. So that is a one-turn right-hand race where the Queen Anne is the straightaway race. You got to keep track of that at Ascot.
This is annoying. Yeah, if you can, yeah, we're going to try to we'll try to swing that over from yeah, without case on hand. We a little bit trickier. Yeah, if you've got Deja, if you've got the if you can pull it through the TV, my other choice is going to end up being that the UK, the racing TV, might come. I can't believe that the NBC involvement would supersede and would somehow supersede the rights for, you know, for racing TV to, in the UK to do the races live. Unless they've got the NBC, if they've got the feed rights on the online, right? Because they do NBC does do the streaming online too, right? Look at you. He's shaken up. Ben Stormy Antarctic, Mustachri in the blue and white, tracking Lauren. That's it. Good job, Deja. Here we go. Charger Bridges. Lauren strikes the front in the Queen Anne. Lauren's wearing her heart on her sleeve, out in front from Breed the Back and La Rabido. Lord Glitters. And now the stand side, One Master, who sweeps to the lead. One Master from Lord Glitters. Then Beat the Bank over on the far side. 100 yards to go. And three of them in line in the Queen Anne. Lord Glitters in the centre. Beat the Bank the far side. Lord Glitters has just won the Queen Anne. From Beat the Bank, One Master. Roman Eyes, La Rabido, Lawrence Mustachri. Barney Roy, Charger Bridge, Matterhorn. Behind the Stormy Antarctic. Lord Glitters, second last year, has come right from the back of the field and I think has just won it in a head-bobbing finish. Beat the Bank over on the far side. When Beat the Bank's head is down, he's just about alongside Lord Glitters. But in that final stride, I think Lord Glitters has just bobbed that little grey head and has won by about a head or so from Beat the Bank in second. One Master who swept through with a big run on the stand side. Roman Eyes, La Bravido. Lawrence couldn't see it out. Mustachri, the Lockinge winner, was only seventh. Always threatened to win a big race, Lord Glitters. Second to Accidental Agent 12 months ago. How different a year on. Lord Glitters, second last year, won it. Accidental Agent won it last year. Never went a yard. Drama. Well, this is... here's a great score right off the bat for our man, Kev Humphreys, who had both One Master and Lord Glitters, and it could have been either one late. It was Lord Glitters, though, the deepest of the ralliers, and One Master that was an enormous number too. He was at 29-1. You're going to delightfully settle for 12-1 on Lord Glitters if you just bet each way. And in between them, though, Beat the Bank. How about Andrew Balding with D'Souza and 27-1 second? So you're going to have Dick to start things off. You got the big balloons to get the Queen Anne, get things rolling here at Royal Ascot.
Yeah, they were. Lord Glitters was beaten 20 lengths in the Lockins last time out, and Beat the Bank was beaten 13 lengths in the Lockins stakes. So it was kind of like take the Lockins, turn it upside down, and go with those horses. But they all ran great. It was a terrific ride by David Tuttope. And he had a kind of a, not a clean trip, but he was in traffic, but he never had the steady. So when he started moving this gray horse forward, she didn't have anything in her way, and she was game as could be, and he was game as could be. Six-year-old gelding. And what you'll hear is this is a win for the bookies. The bookies lose when Frankie wins, the favorites win, things like that. But when the long shots win, the bookies all claim to go home happy and stuff. So Lord Glitters took a little bit of action at 14, but the others, NBC showing 14-1, 20-1, 20-1. That must be the pool over there. I'm not sure. But all three big prices, and Lloyd Glitters kicks off the, how many meetings is this? 308 or something like that? 1,700 something. They've had enough Royal Ascots, and this one starts out with form kind of unpredictable. Nothing to do with the track. It wasn't anything like that. Someone got left in the gate. The horse in stall 16 got left. Let me see who that was.
It was Accidental Agent.
You're right.
That's Accidental Agent. It is. He's in the 16.
But 15. I thought the 15 got left.
15 or the 16?
I thought it was 15.
No, and then that's romanticized, romanized,
romanized.
An outside 37-1.
I think that's the one that got lucky.
Okay.
Saddle cloth numbers, and I don't think that was Accidental Agent, but it was weird.
No, the Accidental Agent was in the 16, and the 15 is romanized.
But I was looking to see where my horses were, and the Michael Stout horse was seemingly in a decent space. He did have a split with about 2 furlongs to go and never really accelerated to get up to the leaders. And the winner came from pretty far back, because when you watch the race, the gray horses, maybe 10th early, was able to get up. So exciting race, and Paramutuals are going to be pretty exciting if you're involved.
Well, and we know our listeners, depending on how they approached it, and in fact, there was a couple of strides there that it did look like the 7-16, the specifically the two horses that Kev focused in on, Lord Glitters and One Master, they were going to run 1-2, Beat the Bank adds to the festivities and splits the two of them. So I hope everybody did a little something there. With the $26 winner, Lord Glitters, will turn toward the Coventry. Dick, I'm going to bring just very quickly to wrap up here, because I've got Norm Cassie joining us in a minute. Some thoughts, anything today at the next 3 days of racing at Presque?
That old Royal Ascot stuff spread out in front of me, so now it's tested. Falling by the wayside. There was a couple tonight. Pull up my computer. Sorry. Tonight's not Monday. In the opener?
Yeah.
Well, the open is a short field. Race two, I like number one, Master of the House. And this rider, Wilbur Alencar, is pretty good. And he has some connection with John Bork, who's the second leading trainer. He's winning like 24% for him in the last 2 months. I like in race two, number one, Master of the House. And then farther back in race four, I like number eight, Fell from Grace, Darian Rodriguez. It wins 32%, third start off the layoff. So there's a couple of horses tonight. If you read my picks online at PrescottDowns.com, there's a couple of horses that are making third starts of the year. And if you go back to last year when they ran in their third start of the year, they ran very well. And then the finale in race eight tonight, number nine, Echoes of Thunder. Trainer's not the biggest high percentage guy, but I just think from an outside post and kind of an iffy field, at a price, I think Echoes of Thunder, number nine, has a shot in race eight. Even if you don't use him to win, I think he's a must use in any of the gimmicks.
Oh, it's a nice card, and as we've discussed before, early on fields get fields a little thinner, and then as the evening progresses, they tend to fill out, and especially with the allowances, the starter allowances, the maiden specials. There's a very good maiden special tomorrow, actually. Group of eight. There's the 2-year-olds start to show up at Presque. Actually, that's on Thursday. And tonight you got that seventh race. You got a 9-horse first level straight allowance. Pretty nice. There's 3 and up maidens in the sixth as well, field of eight. So Presque Isle. And Dick, I appreciate it. We'll talk Thursday. We'll do a little Hong Kong, and we'll look forward to any ideas you got for Thursday, Friday, Saturday
My Ascot picks are available at twinspires.com/news.
Excellent. So Dick Powell, everybody.
Thank you, Steve.
Dick, I appreciate it. Enjoy the rest of the day one. We'll stay right here, no break, because Norm Cassie is standing by, and certainly Saturday night at Churchill Downs, really special. Not that anybody didn't expect that graded stake wins were going to come Norm's way, but getting that first one is always notable. It's a horse you'll obviously always remember. Great to get Norm on and congratulate him on that first graded stake win. It comes in the regret. No regrets, I guess, Norm, going out on your own.
No, sir. Thank you very much for having me on, and thanks for bringing this up.
Yeah, this is great. And to me, she really felt like, the right kind at this time of year. When you're looking at the transition from the winter season into the summer, she just felt progressive and she was going to be not the favorite. So it felt like the kind of horse you wanted to get on, in that setting.
Yeah, I just, and not necessarily any of that. I just thought it was the right time, right horse, right connections. Everything seemed to be, the right place at the right time. We've been close. We've had some really good runners run in stakes and just get beat and kind of be disappointed by it. And I actually ran Bellora, who ran fourth in the race Saturday night, get beat as a heavy favorite on Florida Derby Day, and that was pretty devastating. And, not saying that it made it easier, but it just felt like being at home at Churchill with Julian aboard with the Mary Lou horse in the regret, which the Whitney bred regret, it just seemed poetic and it seemed like the right time.
I love it. There's the whole card actually was dotted with, and I talked about this yesterday, dotted with homebreds by, very notable connections, and certainly a connection you're familiar with Mrs. Whitney, Mrs. Weber winning for your father as well, March to the Arch. There was Mr. Fipke. I mean, it was a funny night that way, a late with Mrs. Dillschneider and Claiborne, and here was the last stake of the night. And Hard Legacy, out of Stone Legacy, the Birdstone daughter. And, wire to wire, talk about that approach? And was that by design, or did Julian just seize the moment?
Well, it was kind of by design, Steve, to be honest, and that's why we picked the race out. We picked the race out going longer just because we felt like that would be where she would be most effective, because what she does is she's a very talented filly. She's very smart, but she's also very stubborn. And so we felt like we would be best if we had a chance to be either right close to the lead or if not on it, and then when she decides to take off in the backside, which is what she's done in all the previous races, that she's, either on the rail or right off of it, and we just let her go. And that's exactly what Julian did. She broke kind of sharp. He kind of angled her off the rail going into the turn, trying to get her to relax a little bit. And then when they hit the backside, she just kind of took him there. And she's just a filly you can't fight. And so what we've done is we figured out where she would be most effective. And, the longer distance grass races are probably going to be, hit her right on the head. And, believe it or not, I know it doesn't happen all the time, but everything went according to plan Saturday night.
And she, going back to October in the debut, she won at First Asking, and she got yielding turf at Keeneland with that start. She found soft footing in the Appalachian. She also got, predictably firm footing at Gulfstream. I mean, it seems like she tries over any kind of going.
She's an honest horse. I always thought that she was talented. She just wasn't really wrapped too tight at the beginning. So what's amazing about her is I didn't think she'd win her first two starts. I thought she'd be like a work in progress. We'd have to build her confidence and figure out, what she needed as the races went on, as we ran her more and more races. But she, something happened where race day, she turns into such a professional. And isn't overwhelmed the way that we thought she would. She can take her show on the road anywhere we go. And, the more and more she does this, the better and better she's going to get. So we're really, really excited about going forward and what we're going to do with her.
Well, what are you going to do? Because there's certainly some very rich three-year-old male and female events that are laying out on the calendar through the summer.
Truthfully, we haven't talked about it too much. I think ultimately our goal is to win the QE2 at Keeneland. She's won there. It's a mile and an eighth. It's a great one. It would be really special to win a great one at Keeneland for us. So I think we'll mark that down on the calendar and work backwards from there. I know there's plenty of opportunities to run her at different places, Saratoga and such. But for now, another thing with her is I like to see her train. I like to see her. It takes a lot out of her when she runs the races because she tries so hard. So before we go mapping out what we're going to do, we're going to have to make sure her energy level's up and everything. And to make a long story short, the QE2 is going to be the long-term goal.
Interesting. All right. So watch and have you work back from there. How far do you think she is capable of going? I mean, hard spun and Birdstone certainly certainly adds some, plenty of stamina.
It's funny because I think the longer the races go, the better she's going to be just because the pace will be slower. And
yep.
She doesn't, the way that I look at it, she doesn't want horses to go by her. So, like, at the top of the stretch in the regret the other night, it looked like when Catalano's filly was going to run right by, but I knew there was no way they were going to run her down because when she gets comfortable and gets going in that nice rhythm that she gets, and then they come to her, she opens back up. So if you go and watch the gallop out, she galloped out around the racetrack. And it's like, okay, the sky's the limit with how far she wants to go. It's just, I just don't know if I really want to go and start running her in those real long-distance races yet just because of the opportunities that we have as a three-year-old now. So maybe after we win the – I'm getting ahead of myself. Maybe after we run in the QE2 and we come back as a four-year-old, we'll start really mapping out the longer distance races for her. But for now, we're just going to shoot for that.
Really nice. And how's it? How's it feel? You've come close. You've been in a handful of graded stakes so far, posing for that picture with the trophy.
It's just relief. I'll be, just to be 100% honest with you. You set expectations and goals for yourself and where you think you should be. And I mean, probably, you know, at this point in my career, and it probably were unrealistic. You know, it's a struggle. It's a big struggle when you first go out on your own. You got to have the horses, and you got to have a lot of luck on your side. So you know, it just there's just relief now. I feel kind of now that we can really start building and really start growing, and now we can say, hey, we can do this on our own, and we're pretty good at it.
Now, that was never in doubt, and Hard Legacy, one of those horses that obviously you'll treasure that photograph, and that one is the first of the graded stakes, and certainly some other good things are happening. Norm, give us a couple of thoughts. You did win as well earlier in the week. You broke the maiden on She Dares the Devil. What did you have there?
She's very, very talented, Steve. She, you know, we didn't even have her cranked. We had worked her a few times out of the gate, and we're like, you know what, she's talented enough that if we get lucky and she has the right type of trip, she could win a race, even though we don't have her 100% ready. She's ultra talented. She's very, very professional. She was like running an older state course in her first race. It was amazing. And, you know, I guess we'll probably shoot for something like Schuylerville at opening day at Saratoga with her, and then build from that. Overall, it's funny. I was talking to my crew, like, you know, the ones that have been here since day one, and they're like, you know, overall we had a handful. I wouldn't even say a handful. We had a couple good 2 year olds last year. Okay, 2 year olds, Hard Legacy included. And then the rest were kind of just filler. This year we have a lot better stock this year. So hopefully we can really get going, and we'll see what happens the rest of the year.
This is for Glencrest, and a filly bred by Windstar. What's the backstory on purchase and you know, that kind of thing?
I don't really know the entire backstory. I know that Deuce Greathouse is bloodstock agent. He was the guy who picked out Teppan, and he's one of my good friends. And he's probably, between him and Mary Lou, are my biggest supporters as far as the amount of horses they send me. And he just sent me, 3 or 4 2-year-olds at the beginning of April this year, and she was one of them. And we're just lucky enough that she came into our barn. So, you know, I don't know how he ended up with her. I'm sure at some point I'll end up with that story. You know, they just send them to me, and I just train them and put them in the races they can win.
This is interesting. I'm just pulling up the auction history. This is wild. She was bought by Big Q's Bloodstock at the Keeneland November, the mixed sale, as a weanling for $100,000, and then RNA'd as a yearling in September the next year, and that's the last transaction. So must have been working somewhere, and I'm guessing this is a private kind of a private discovery, and she's a daredevil. Obviously got to be one of Daredevil's first winners, right?
I think I don't know how many he's had, but I know on back-to-back days he's had winners. He had a horse win in Europe.
That's right.
A colt the day before. That made it feel even better going into the race. Like, we felt really confident going into the race, to be honest. Just the way that she had been working. She had been working lights out. And then that horse won the day before, and it was like, okay, we have a daredevil. You know, sometimes you don't know what to think. It's like, okay, we have a daredevil filly. We don't, you know, stallion's still improving or whatever. And then to have a winner the night before, I was like, okay, that made it feel a lot better. I don't know what the transaction was with Deuce and how he ended up with the horse or anything, but I'm sure he's happy he is or no.
And you know, it's funny, you just jogged my memory because I was watching Andy and the team, you know, doing the Fox broadcast Thursday because we were running shortly after this race. In New York with Carlisle Bell, and they sort of asked out loud, he and Maggie asked out loud about whether this might have been Daredevil's first. And I looked it up, and what you're referring to is the winner at Hamilton Park the day before in England. So She Dares the Devil is Daredevil's first North American winner, mm-hmm. and first Philly winner, obviously. And the race at Hamilton Park was a kind of a cheap, kind of a low level maiden, but this was not. And so She Dares the Devil, we'll watch for her at Saratoga. Since we mentioned a 2-year-old, Norm, what else you got on the 2-year-old front that you're excited about and get close with?
I actually have a horse in Thursday by Carpe Diem. He's been okay starting off so far. I've been aggressive with him and running him for a price. Just feel like we could have taken an edge with him, but he's training really well. I have a mine shaft filly named Powder River that probably won't run until the middle of the Ellis Park meet that's been training really well. I have an Into Mischief filly for Jackpot Ranch that she's kind of in the same boat as the mine shaft filly, where she's probably going to show up in the middle of July, maybe late July at Ellis. And I actually got 5 2-year-olds for Mary Lou Whitney this year, and they're all Excellent. Very talented, but they're all more long distance horses, so I wouldn't expect them to show up anytime soon. But it is extremely blessed right now, and like I said, the overall feeling is that at this time last year compared to that, we've got a much, much better hand, and so hopefully that translates to a much better year. And really, I guess probably going to take 2 or 3 years for this thing to really, go the direction we want it to go. And, but we're heading in that direction now.
No doubt. You mentioned Mrs. Whitney. What about that other homebred out of the Birdstone mare, Mischievous Bird?
Actually, he had to go home for a little bit, and so we won't see him for a little while. Just another bad luck incident with him. So that was a kick in the gut the day before, or the week before, and then Hard Legacy come back and won the regret. That's just kind of that's how the game goes.
No doubt, we shouldn't gloss over the fact that Belle Laura was involved and ran okay in the stake Saturday.
Belle Laura's going to be okay, Steve. I think we took for granted, she ran poorly on Florida Derby Day, and that was a head scratcher. But we got her right back to the barn and took the barn. It turned out that she was fighting an infection, and I don't think we had missed it. It must have just developed that day, because we're pretty diligent about, running horses at 100%, and we just missed it for whatever reason. And at least we had an excuse. But make a long story short, she hadn't run since then, and she had run poorly. So I thought I had her ready to go a mile and an eighth on Saturday night, and I just don't think I did. She was right there inside the quarter pole, and Tyler said she just kind of flattened out the last eighth of a mile. And she's very, very talented, too. She can hold her own against Hard Legacy any day of the week. I do believe that. I think Hard Legacy on that day had an edge simply because of the trip and simply because she had been running well. She had been training extremely well, and she was ready to do that day. The beautiful thing about Belle Laura is that she's still in A other than, so we have a lot of options with her. She'll probably, we'll have to see when the condition book comes out at Saratoga, but I would expect her to show up in just an entry-level allowance race, the first 2 weeks of Saratoga if it's offered.
Very nice. Well, lots of good things happening. And then on the personal front, actually, I've got a question from a listener, Norm. John on the fourth floor at Churchill wants to know what household chores has Gabby laid out for you this afternoon?
Well, it's raining out, so there's not a whole lot I can do outside. I'm sure I'll put the laundry away. And the basement's kind of a mess, so I'll have to clean that up. We're both off this afternoon, so I'm sure we're going to have something to do around the house.
Courtesy of John Nichols, who is the burr under the saddle of so many of the Kentucky horsemen and horsewomen. The only person who gets away with murder is Michelle Lovell. She can do anything she wants.
That's funny.
Norman, delighted for you. This is just great, and plenty more to come. Continued success.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me on anytime.
I love it. Norm Cassie, everybody, and of course you can follow Norm on Twitter. It's Norm Cassie, nice and simple, and you should be following Norm, and he's broken through with the graded stake win, hard legacy, and many more to come. Much more to come. We've rifled through a first hour. Let's take a break here, top of the hour. We'll come back. We will get to the two-year-old race immediately, the Coventry. And as we go to the break, let me get some prices here. We know that Arizona and Threat are going to be, you know, the two, you know, major players in here. And Arizona is 6-5. That doesn't come as a surprise. 6-5 and then 7-1 on Threat. So the one Arizona and the 16 Threat taking the money as expected. Guildsman actually is the second choice. It's 6-1, kind of slipped in here for Qatar Racing. Archie Watson with O'Shane Murphy. And the alternative that Kev came up with, 26-1. Royal Lytham, the 15. Royal Lytham is a big number in here, 26-1. And Kev already putting money in everybody's pocket with the winner of the first. And I'll get you those prices when we come back. Let's take the break here. The Coventry is up next, then Andy Serling. We also, after the Kingstand at 10:40, the third race, we're going to talk to Oscar De La Torre, who is spearheading Thursday's rally at Santa Anita for the backstretch community. And Oscar is a tireless worker for the Latino community in general, and is helping provide a voice for the backstretch community. And looking forward to talking to him later this hour. Hour two at the races, back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Amazing achievements for Pennsylvania breeds on the world stage. Thanks to Finest City, Unique Bella, and Shamrock Rose, PA joins Kentucky as the only state in the past decade to breed Eclipse Award champions three straight years. Add that to our unmatched incentives. Plus, our racehorse development fund can only be used to support PA breeding and racing. Why breed anywhere else? This is Brian Sanfratello. Go to PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Why is accredited? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. After a complete review of an organization, aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up at ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use Express Fund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're gonna love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Dick on Sirius XM Radio.
We're back at the races, and they're starting to load at Ascot for the Coventry Even Money on Arizona, the Coolmore, Aiden O'Brien, Ryan Moore. This is a no-nay-never colt out of that nice Lady Edderly, and just about set. Gildsman 6-1, 7-1 on Threat. 25-1 on Royal Lytham, the price alternative offered by Kev. And I've got to look over here, and there's still a couple more to load, it looks like. The first of the two-year-old races. Here we go.
Furlongs. Big day out for these young horses, early stages of their career. All set. And they leave the stalls then. Out well over on the far side. Golden Horde showed up well with Mono Ski. And they're breaking into two groups. So far side, Golden Horde with Mono Ski, also Majestic Sands over there. Arizona just bumped along early with Well of Wisdom in that far side group with Q8 Direction, also King of Athens. The overall leaders on the stand side, and that is Macchion, who leads Coast. Then the striped cap belonging to Fort Myers, the blue cap, also blue and orange colours, Royal Lytham. And they're just ahead of Ropey Guest, and towards the back in this near side group, Lord of the Lodge, as Macchion and Mono Ski, the two Johnson horses, lead the respective groups. At this stage, Threat is right towards the back of the near side group. So Macchion, beige colours, has the overall lead on the stand side. Mono Ski, Majestic Sands over on the far side with Golden Horde, Well of Wisdom. They're making some ground is Guildsman in the maroon colours. Threat makes ground amongst horses red, white and blue. Coast, then behind these Fort Myers. Arizona flat to the boards, but he's making some headway over on the far side. Macchion continues to lead. The challengers, however, are beginning to mount. Arizona on the far side. Golden Horde, then Fort Myers. Threat continues to make ground. Guildsman right up the centre, wide across the course. Guildsman and Arizona on the far side. Threat on the near side with Fort Myers. Right across the course in the Coventry. Arizona finishing off the strongest. And Arizona wins the race again for Aiden O'Brien. Beats Threat, Guildsman, Fort Myers, Golden Horde. Ropey Guest run a remarkable race in sixth. Maxi Boy was next. And then behind these was Royal Lytham, Well of Wisdom. More towards the back. Light Angel never really showed back. Yon couldn't see it out. And Coast was last of all. Arizona, a surging run, was off the bridle from an early stage, but finished off strongly to win the race for a ninth time for Aiden O'Brien. On even strides, I thought Threat may just have bobbed Guildsman out in second place, and that looks to be the finishing order. Fourth place just for Fort Myers ahead of Golden Hort. And then back behind these, Ropey Guest, just under 1 minute and 13 seconds to establish the pecking order in the Coventry. Wasn't 100% decisive, but the market got it right, and the race goes again to Aiden O'Brien and Ryan Moore. I think they might be hearing a little bit more about them during the
Well, there you go. And Arizona that really just got pounded on the board, and the first two choices run 1-2 in here. And what did Guildsman go off ultimately? 6-1. So even money over 6-1, Arizona, the no-nay-never. And that was impressive. And, in fact, I'm curious regarding no-nay-never. He must have, he's got, I'm going to imagine he's had some stake. Yeah, he's had, I think, yeah, sure he has. He's had a stake win or two. Arizona and just go to my notes because I don't think. Well, and Gieltzman was one of the ones that Nick liked. Kev's idea, Royal Lithium, sounded like when they went through the running order, sounded like might have been, I don't know, sixth, give or take. The Glen Eagles Colt, another of O'Brien's. But Arizona, very much as expected. Where was Threat, actually? Threat didn't really pose much of one, did he? There you go. Well, we're two races in, and I promised you for those that haven't had a chance to look at their account yet, if you bet and went to work or don't have immediate access, Lord Glitters in the Queen Anne, 23.40, beat the bank, 16.40, and one master, 18.20. So if you bet each way, as they say, you did okay with Kev's two horses, Lord Glitters and one master. And how about a $779 exacta, the 7-3, the swinger, the best was there. Let me see if some of you used the 7 and the 16. What did the 7-16 pay? $89.50 for first third. And, you know, this is a bet. Andy Serling's going to join us next. And you can reach out to Deja for Andy. Andy had the, that always makes me laugh, when it looked like there was a chance that this bet was going to make it to the United States. You know, it's known as the swinger. It's known as the Omni around the world. Andy had the greatest nickname for it, the Inexacta. You know, for those that hit it second and third, for instance, second and third here paid $109. First and third, $89.50. First and second in the swinger paid $317, and the swinger paid, where is it? $109. And the best of the swinger numbers was second, third, actually. Second, third paid $238 for beat the bank and one master. So some very nice numbers to start the day at Royal Ascot, and then very formful in the second here. The two-year-olds, the King Stand is next. We'll get a chance to build up to Joe Orsino and Imprimis. Andy joins us now. Andy, good morning.
Hey, I'm on. Hi, Steve.
How you doing?
This is great for you, this Royal Ascot. You got to bring out like all kinds of your favorite pretentious like sayings and stuff, right?
Pretty much. I've got a checklist. I've got to spread them out though till Friday. That's the one.
You know,
challenge.
I was watching the procession of the Queen coming in. You know how she drives like in on the course. And
yeah.
I'm thinking, you know, with it being Dave O'Rourke's first year, that's probably the way to kick off Saratoga.
Bring him in a coach.
Whatever, you know, an old Buick. I don't know, something. You know, let's see if we can arrange that.
We could do it the way.
Which car would you want to be? Would you settle for the third car?
Yes. Yes. That'd be fine. I like it. I like it. Have you had a chance to listen to Dave? You know, I had him, I must have been, was it Wednesday or Thursday? It must have been Thursday.
Is that a trick question?
Well, you've got some downtime. It's, you know, Monday, Tuesday.
Yeah, I know. I was busy clipping my nails, but I'm going to get to it right after I get those nails clipped.
You know, you should listen because I thought he was terrific. It was one of his first public outings.
I know. Well, I did a podcast with him, but Nausea seems to refuse to want to release it. So I don't know. He's probably got some plans for it or something.
Well, I see that. Speaking of Nausea, I see he's off on another world adventure. He's like 10-10.
Getting ready for the World Cup. You know, he's going over to Madrid.
Yeah.
Listen, I admire Naj, you know. He goes there by himself. He doesn't know anybody. It's pretty cool, actually. I'm going to miss him.
Will he be back before Saratoga, or is this an extended?
Yeah, but I won't be in next week, so I'm going to have to see him for 2 weeks. Yeah, I'll be back. He'll be back next week. We assume, unless he decides to stay.
Yeah. All right. Well, good for him. And I guess this is the right time, you know, before the Stars and Stripes and before Saratoga. So everybody, you know, everybody's making their.
What about you? When are you going on vacation, Steve?
I think I got to figure this out because you know, we got the wedding on Saturday, so I can't be on Friday.
This Saturday
coming up. Yeah, 22nd. Wow. So we're
the royal wedding. The Royal Bix Royal Wedding.
Yeah, the Bix Royal Wedding. But I think I'll be back for next week because we're going to go to Boston.
I won't be on next week. So.
All right, no problem. We're going to broadcast Friday ahead of closing weekend at Suffolk. We're going to celebrate New England racing.
All right, Suffolk. Having their 47th final race meet.
this is really truly final, absolute, no questions asked.
I'll take the over.
No, this is it. I'll
take the over. I know them and the Who.
They have to vacate.
Oh, they're moving on to Great Barrington.
Great Barrington, exactly.
Right, the reopening of Great Barrington. They'll be racing at Suffolk before they race at Great Barrington. Well, you know, they just said the Belmont Sprint Championship. Isn't it the John Nehru Sprint Championship?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
I did mention you on the show the other day. I gave you credit.
Well, thank you.
It was painful for me to do that.
Well, I'll tell you what,
well,
you were very nice.
David and I couldn't remember the Dwyer. We were trying to remember the fifth stake race. Of course, the Dwyer. I don't know why I forgot that, but who knows?
Well, I really was thrilled that the suggestion.
Did somebody listen to you in racing?
Well,
be careful what you wish for, Steve.
Yeah, you're right. It felt like the right person, right?
It was a wonderful idea. I agree. Absolutely. John Nehru was a huge part of racing, especially in New York, but racing in general for many, many years. Yeah. Missed today, missed still. Always great to speak to him. I didn't really have a chance too much in my life. When I did, he was just wonderful. And obviously, a true training genius.
Very much. And breeding.
Yeah.
And a breeding genius.
Yeah.
I mean, when you think about what he impacted, including, you know, at a key juncture in the development of the New York bred program, Sugar Maple, very successful.
Very successful. Yeah. If I could go back in a time machine and see one horse, I probably would see Dr. Fager, you know. I would probably, Man of War, right? There's a lot of them in there in different ways. Wouldn't mind going over and seeing Nijinsky. But Dr. Fager, you know, because he was so close to when I first started going to the racetrack, and more than any other horse, people that were around then speak of him in awe. More than Secretariat, more than, you know, not to denigrate any horses, but Dr. Fager is the one horse, if you talk to people that were going to races seriously, and at least by the 60s, let's say, he's the one horse that virtually every one of them talks about.
Agreed. For me, if I was going to suggest those, a Round Table would be one that I'd want to see.
When did he run? Late 50s?
Late 50s. He was part of that incredible class of 57.
Crop, right.
Yes.
The old rulers.
Yeah. But most notable as America's first great turf horse and really, you know, made people sit up and take notice of turf racing in the United States. And even before him, I'd want to see Gallarette.
She has a crazy record, right?
Yes, yes.
Like a crazy record. She ran like a million times, right?
And she ran against males.
Oh, they all ran against the boys back then. I mean, it was, but even more, I mean, look at Juve, right? You know, yes. You talk about horses like that. I mean, we'd love to see a run. There was a Jay Hoppe wrote a really, really nice piece about Exceller the other day. Did you get a chance to read that?
Yes, I did.
That was really terrific. Yeah. And he was, you know, and I, of course, I remember seeing, you know, when you read about horses, you remember seeing Race, and not just, you know, obviously that great race against Slough, but even, you know, the second behind Slough in the race before, the Woodward's underrated. One of the reasons a lot of us bet him in the Gold Cup were, arguably he got lucky, obviously wasn't the best horse that day, but in the Woodward where he got beaten four lengths by Slough, you know, he's forced to play Slough's game as they're chasing around at a slow pace. And he ran very gamely, but even saw him run turf races as well. And he was a tremendous horse. He was just born. He was just racing here in the wrong time to won an Eclipse. It's amazing what he did, and he never won an Eclipse Award. And understandably never won one, but it's amazing what he accomplished. Because he was truly a champion without a crown.
Yeah, and that happens. I mean, it's one of those weird phenomena. It just, you know, who was it just recently that fell in between the cracks?
Charles Barkley?
Was it
sure there have been plenty, but Exceller. I don't know. I mean, Weya probably. Did she win an Eclipse Awards? I mean, I don't know when they had them.
I think so. Well, they called them, the championship. I mean, there were still championships.
She won grade ones on turf and dirt as well. I loved her. I absolutely loved Weya. Just loved her. I'll never forget watching her win the Diana against Pearl Necklace.
Are you gonna present her plaque at the Hall of Fame ceremony?
No. I would imagine Peter Brandt's involved in that, right? Because he
that's true. That's true. I hope he's around. I hope he could be here. Yeah.
I would imagine he would be there. Why would he not?
That'd be great.
You see Peter on a Thursday at Belmont if he has a horse running. He loves the game. It's great to have him back in the game. You see him. He's a true great supporter of the game. I can't imagine he wouldn't be there for her. I remember the Wildensteins had her. She's one of the first horses that I remember Angel Penn and the Wildensteins bringing over from Europe. I was at the Man of War when she beat Tiller for my grandmother. Cordero rode her. She got up by a head. It was a 5-horse field with a lot of very good horses, a number of good horses in there.
Wait. They had five horse stake fields back then?
I know, believe it or not.
There weren't 12? There was 12 in every stake race.
Right, and every race.
Absolutely.
Each race was oversubscribed.
Exactly. Exactly.
Right. Tremendous racing every day. It was incredible.
Yep. They
pick 5, 6, 6s, 6-4s, 8s, 10 defectors. It was incredible.
Don't forget the 2% takeout.
Right, racing never sucked. Racing didn't suck until the internet came along. We didn't know that racing sucked until the internet came along. Thank God for the internet.
Well, I also, you know, I appreciate you. I didn't know you'd made the mention on the John Nehru, but I'm much more. I gotta acknowledge your hand in our win on Thursday, because you were instrumental.
Regrettable hand. You actually told me you were going to scratch. It was one of the dumbest comments. You and your lifetime of dumb comments to me. You telling me you were going to scratch that horse was really incredible. Now, it turned out, let's be honest, the favorite scratched the race. And I believe what I said to you is you could easily be second here behind Harkness, right? And Harkness came out.
Yes.
That you
yes.
could easily win. And you didn't easily win, but you won. That was very exciting for you.
Yeah,
very
it was a nice win. Appreciate
yeah.
it.
You were even listed as the breeder of that horse. For better or for worse, in DRF.
That would be correct. They don't put that down accidentally. and then it was funny because Maggie thought that Ausable was trained by Dave Donk.
No, no,
of
I know.
Course,
I
said, you corrected her. You were very polite.
Did I correct? I don't remember. I couldn't remember if she was still on, and I said to, I think it was on with Greg, and I said. Oh, was she on with me when that race was run? Oh,
yes.
Yeah, she was on with me. That's why, yeah. She said, and I said, no, I think that was actually one of Steve's horses. That's why it's bred.
Yeah.
It's rare that Maggie's wrong, actually, on those things. She's unbelievable. She's unbelievable with stuff. It's funny between us. It's very unusual when one of us doesn't have something. She keeps such good notes, which is why she gets frustrated when she doesn't have something. obviously occasionally she misses things, but she's an incredible font of information.
Yeah, I well, again, as I did on Twitter, and
you're very nice, but that's thanks.
Now, and you, well, this is I've said for years, your ability to specifically appreciate horses cutting back. It's your one of your favorite angles. You invariably identify horses that are running longer that should be going shorter, and it. You know, your understanding of that dynamic is amazing.
I think one of the reasons that trainers always think their horses can go long is that a lot of times the sprints are tougher. You know, so in reality, you don't have to be quite as good or talented. Forgetting about distance, you know, naturally talented to win some of the longer races, because these days it just seems the sixes and sevens, they're just tougher, they're faster. But the problem is some of these horses don't really want to go long. And listen, she's a horse you picked up checks with. And, you know, I've talked about her in the past. She is who she is. But she's been competitive in some races, especially during the winter and stuff. But, you know, listen, you stuck with it and you got in the right spot. And she's a horse that usually runs okay. And horses that continue to run okay will invariably, if they get in a reasonably right spot, they're going to win a race almost by accident sometimes. You know what I mean? Just because they're showing up. The fact that they show up and they run, that one day they'll be in the right spot in the right situation and they can win a race. In the meantime, they're picking up checks. So that's a good thing, too. And that's sort of where she stands.
Well, and she's been improving, actually, as things have gone on. She also clearly is one of those rare horses, as you've discussed, that really does seem to prefer moisture in the ground.
Yeah,
And she got real pace. I mean, she spent the whole winter not getting...
She did. And she also got a pace that didn't figure to hold together because the speed horses weren't very good. And sometimes that'll create a dynamic. You know, the pace in itself doesn't have to be blazing fast, but if the horses setting it aren't going to hold on, it brings the closers into the race a little bit more.
Yeah.
And in reality, you know, the cutback is only going to accentuate that. So you get a horse that probably a little better going shorter, but has been going longer. So then you cut her back and you find her in a feasible spot, him or her, in this case her, it's going to accentuate their kick a little bit. They get a little extra out of the cutback, I think. And it worked out for her, and that's great, you know. And
I got to give
it would have been good.
Well, I give the kid credit too, Benji Hernandez, because she has had a tendency to kind of drop out of it. And he had her close enough so that she didn't have too much work to
and
do
also,
either.
He also didn't bury her on the inside. You know, she got buried on the inside in a race at Aqueduct.
Oh, that was tough.
Where it looked like she was going to be second.
Yeah.
And kind of just died down there. And she's a horse that, like a lot of, you know, especially, you know, a lot of horses, they just don't want to run down there. And they're not going to run down there. And they need to be out in the clear. And sometimes, listen, you have no choice and you sort of get unlucky. But at Belmont, and it's interesting looking at Belmont, there was a race last week at Belmont. I don't know if you saw it, where Charlie Baker had a horse, it was a one horse, I forget its name. And it was like, I think it was like 7 or 9 to 1, and it won the seventh race. I think it was Friday. And it just circled the field from last. And, you know, I mean, I think Joel rode it, and he was on the rail until probably two-thirds of the way through the turn. He angled out, and he went widest of all. And so I was looking at Trackus afterwards. Because, you know, I think there's a tendency people see this horse make these big wide runs in the stretch. Say, oh, my God, this horse lost a ton of ground. I was thinking this horse didn't lose much ground. And sure enough, the horse that had run 19 feet longer than the shortest runner in the race. The interesting thing was, it was a big field. I think it was like maybe 10 horses. It was a reasonably big field, just like the old days. And I think the spread, and the horses were pretty spread out, you know. On the track, too, you know, wides and such. You know, nobody out in the eight path, obviously. And I think the spread between, it was a seven furlong race, between the lowest ground covered and the most ground covered was 33 feet. And I think that's somewhat indicative of especially dirt racing at Belmont. You just don't lose that much ground. You know, the Belmont was a little higher, don't forget, because it was a two-turn race. But even in that race, right, Tastis lost 60-something feet. Well, he was 4 to 5 wide the whole way around the track, two turns. The ground loss at Belmont is not that significant, which is one of the reasons, and even on the widener, you could say this is the case, a little less on the inner, still a big course, but a little less so. The guys who glue themselves to the rail and then hope to get lucky to get out, they're making a mistake. The most important thing at Belmont on the dirt, but also even on the widener, is not to get locked in. I understand you want to try to save some ground on the turn. You know, you want to stay covered up and get that sort of explosion when you get out. But don't get yourself locked in. More horses will lose races, especially in the widener, 7 a mile, mile 16, by burying themselves inside and never being able to get out or having to rally inside, not wanting to, then horses will lose by losing ground. It is going to be much more, I would say, by the former, not the latter. And I just think there's a mentality, and I understand the save ground in Saratoga in two-turn turf races, you know, Mellon or Inner. You do have to save ground, as Richie says, at least one turn, right? And I agree. And obviously you want to save as much ground as you can, and you know the best trip is the inside out. But Belmont's much different, and I think some of the riders don't get that, and they constantly get in trouble because of it. And probably some of the trainers don't either, to be fair, and they may give, you know, mediocre instructions. Or, you know, and I think if maybe I'm wrong, but I imagine if you did a real study of races on the widener, I'll bet you the ground loss is not that significant. And I just think that's, you're better off losing a little ground and being out in the clear than you are bearing on the rail. And the ideal trip is sort of like a two-wide trip where you have options, right? But you don't want to get buried there, and you see a lot of horses that could have won to get buried.
Good advice all around.
Yeah, sort of that race though with Joel. The funny thing about watching that race was that horse that Joel rode ran the last quarter on the dirt in 23-4. It's like a 40 claimer New York 3-year-old race. It's pretty amazing. I think that the next closest horse ran like 7 or 8 lengths slower. I mean, there was one obviously by a lot, but that's very unusual, right? To see a horse run that significantly faster in a dirt race. It's pretty incredible, actually. Anyway.
Well,
what
a couple
else?
Of thoughts. Almost. A couple of thoughts. I want to slip in. It's a quiet weekend. We got some state bred stuff, Stallion Series on Sunday. We got the Wild Applause on Saturday.
Love Wild Applause. Who is her dam?
Oof.
Really? The greatest brood mares of the 70s and 80s. She ran the 70s. She won the Diana. She may have won the Diana twice. Glenn Tribute. She was a Northern Dancer. Wild Applause was a Northern Dancer Glen Tribute for Macmillan Rokeby. And she was very successful in the dirt. No, she won the Acorn or not. She finished second in the test to a horse for John and Shepherd, I think, named Sintra. And she came back and ran on the turf in the Diana against Olders. And that was her first turf start. She was a Northern Dancer Glen Tribute. And I believe she made $9. She won. I don't think she ever ran again. I could be wrong, but I don't think she ever ran again after that. That was 19... I don't think it was 83. It was somewhere in that range. Might have been 81, actually. In the early 80s. Let me see what year Central in the test. That was Wild Applause. She was a tremendous, tremendous horse. And she was the dam of somebody like... Blair Trumpets. Let me look up who she was the dam of. Hang on a second. Let me see who she was the dam of. Can't remember. Hang on. Let's look her up. I happen to have it right here. I can look her up as a broodmare. I can look her up as a... who's running the Wild Applause? I think a bunch of horses, right?
I haven't seen.
A blowout.
She was the... I know she was the dam of... Eastern Echo.
Roar? Oh, yeah, that's who it was. Eastern Echo. She was an 81 foal. That was 84, actually. She was a 3-year-old 84. Okay, so it's 84. Oh, this is my last summer after college. Queen's Wild, Eastern Echo, Blair of Trumpets. Yeah, Blair of Trumpets. She was a dam of Blair of Trumpets, right? Roar also, and Roar as well. It was pretty good, actually. I think he broke his maiden first out with a big fig. She wasn't Yell. She's also a dam of Yell.
How about that?
Second Mother Goose to Spoken Fur.
That's the second dam of the late.
Exactly, yes, she is the second dam of the late. And it's funny because there was a horse that was in that family that modded enter in the turf. That's right. I saw it the other day that there's a horse that was entering the turf at Churchill, and the race got rained off. I think he ended up running second. as a second choice. And I remember Weiner was getting turf because he saw no immediate turf pedigree, but then it traces back to Glowing Tribute. You know that Glowing Tribute was like greatest. You know the horses that she was the dam of? It's tremendous. It's an incredible line. I mean, it's Hero's Honor was the first foal. Who won his first turf race, the last race after Slew of Gold beat Base Motel in the 83 Marlboro, the Woodward, whatever, the first time they met. And it was Marlboro. And he paid $22 as a college. I bet one big double between Base Motel and him. I bet with a bookmaker, and I could only call in the morning, you know, and bet. I had to watch the Frank Wright show and see Slew of Gold beat him in the nose, and then Arizona went and paid $20 and something I could do about it. Wild Applause was next. Then there was named Glowing Prospect. Then there was next, then Glowing Honor. Glowing Honor was the fifth foal, and she, you know, she won $300,000 a lot. Then she won the Diana as a 3-year-old. And I want to say that she may have broken her maiden first time on the grass, or broken her maiden in the race where I believe Richie got hurt when Richie broke his neck the first time.
Wow.
On Memorial Day. I think so. Richie doesn't remember that, but I think so. Seattle Glow also was stakes placed. Crowning Tribute. Then Sea Hero. She was the dam of Sea Hero. And then Coronation Cup. We have a race named for in Saratoga. And then Maki. And Maki was pretty good, actually. She was an amazing, amazing broodmare. Anyway, I digress.
No, we love that. We love when you riff on these kinds of things.
I'm waiting for Primus and Primus. I think he's going to run okay. I bet he's way over betting in U.S. pools, right?
He's 6-1.
Yeah, that's too short.
Blue Point, let's go over the odds, by the way, while we're doing this in the King's Stand. Here you go. Blue Point is 6-5. Patash is 5-2, and they're pretty inseparable, I think, by most accounts. Mabs Cross, who both our man Kev Humphreys and Nick Luck pushed, is 8-1, which feels like a good price. And then we look at 8-1 on Mabs Cross. 10-1 on Sergei Prokofiev, the Scat Daddy for Coolmore, the Canadian bred. And those are the modest, then up to Soldier's Call, who's 19-1. Everything else is in the stratosphere. And 3 minutes, 3 minutes to post. Here. By the way, Andy, I got a mention from Saturday, the 2-day carryover, and then I was shocked, really, the way things went. 7-1, and you had the 12-1, you had an 11-1, but it got hit. Three winners, maybe?
I don't know what it paid.
It paid $148,000.
Oh. Wasn't me.
It was pick six, pick six, pick six, $120,349. Yeah, and I tell you what else was tough was the cross country proved difficult with that winner, the upset winner of the Obeya, threw that into a tizzy. I think you only had one winner in the cross country, $43,000.
Wow, wasn't me either.
I'm
heading into the gate. I'm going to go.
Anyway. All right. That's it. Enjoy the race. And, Rick Hammerly sent as a fellow Dead fan, he says, enjoy the show tonight.
I'm not going.
Obviously. You're not going.
I'm in New York.
All right.
So. I'm sorry I'm not going, but things got screwed up, so we didn't go. Sold my tickets. That's okay.
All right. I'll survive. Well, yeah, there you go. You'll see.
If Jerry Garcia comes back tonight and I didn't go, I'm going to be bummed. But I'll be glad Jerry's back.
Oh, too fun. Andy, thank you. Andy Serling, everybody, and kind of a free association visit from Andy here. Kind of fun. We're going to stay here as they move toward the gate. I'm a little bit ahead of the... Oh, look at... I see that cute little procession of kids, of four children, all dressed up. And Deja's a little bit behind me, I think, on the video. So I've got the horses kind of milling behind the gate as they do. So I'd say we'll start to load here momentarily. Or maybe they are starting to load. There we go. Patash has mentioned 2-1. A little over 2-1, 5-2 on Blue Point.
this is interesting. Now that the Royal Ascot feed, so it's interesting that the tote that I'm looking at versus what they're posting on television, that must be their Batash is the favorite. And I'll tell you, Mavs Cross is third choice there at 6-1. So on the tote that you're all able to bet, Mavs Cross, there's a little disparity. There's a couple of points between there and here. So take a piece of that. I guess I see umbrellas are up, right? So a little little inclement at Ascot. It's when the sun is shining there, it's spectacular. There is Batash on the screen. I've got to admit, I've become a fan of Blue Point. Going back to his meltdown, it looks like Batash, they're going to put the blindfold on to load him too. But when Blue Point couldn't run at Dubai 2 years ago, there we go. Well, best of luck here to Joe Orsino. And we hope Breeze Easy, who had a winner here last year with Shank Shank Shank. And as I said, there are a couple of... There we go.
Blue Point, the all-blue far side, behind those Soldiers Call, and then comes Mavs Cross, head towards the line, Blue Point in front, Bashar's nearest to us, trying to get to him, but it's the same as last year, Blue Point from Batash, Mavs Cross and Soldiers Point, very tight third and fourth, then Ferryland in Primus, Equilateral and Signora Caballo.
Or you may miss it, despite the rain, they'll do it in just less than 1 minute. For the Group 1 Kingstown Stakes, sprinters are in the gates.
Okay, so as you heard from
the last one's going forward. Mavs Cross, that'll be. So here's
Deja. You're getting that second feed from. There you go. All right, beautiful. It comes down very much to Blue Point and Batash, and Blue Point in the last. Several jumps, Batash looked, maybe 75 yards out, looked like he was getting the better of it. But in the late strides, Blue Point extends, wins by about a length. I didn't exactly see where Imprimis ended up, and I didn't see where he was getting calls. So we'll find out in a minute. Let's take the break, though, right here, because I want to come back. Oscar De La Torre is going to join us and talk about the Thursday, call it what you want, rally, media event, awareness builder that is designed to give a voice to the backstretch community in Southern California. Oscar De La Torre joins us next.